fighting for America.
As your commander-in-chief, I will not commit you and the rest of our armed forces to fighting another ground war in Iraq. They can secure their own country's futures.
Fighting for Idaho.
I think these guys got to realize that they're role models and they can't be doing things like what they're doing today. They need to recognize that, hey, look, if I do something like that, I'm going to get suspended or banned from the league.
Fighting for you.
Congratulations for the Marconi Award. Did you have to speak Italian to receive that?
Yes, I like these very much.
Boise's Mr. Right, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award. Kevin Miller in the Morning.
I'm so proud of you.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning, 580 KIDO. Kevin Miller in the Morning. Phone numbers 580-5436. 580-KIDO. You can always reach us at kevin@kidoam.com on Facebook and everything else. We have the hot list. We'd love for you to check that out. Give us a click. That'll show our folks here and across America that our existence is justified. We're always working to create content, whether it's here, online, or everywhere. We're joined now by a gentleman that I've had the pleasure of speaking with in the past. He's a great guy. He's got a new bestseller out on Amazon. He's in a bit of a controversy right now with the New York Times and their bestseller list. They're not giving him his due, but we will. David Limbaugh joining us, author of Jesus on Trial. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Great. Good to have you with us.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Did you ever think that you would live in a world today, in the Judeo-Christian world that we live in, with our history, where secularism and moral relevancy has taken over?
Well, I have witnessed this in my 61 years, and I'm no longer surprised. What surprises me is the fecklessness of Christians, fellow Christians, and other like-minded people who do not rise up against this stuff, and we allow this to happen to us. We are the majority, but we are a apathetic or disengaged or even cowardly majority sometimes. And it's discouraging to me that people won't stand up and they poo-poo these things and deny that they're existing. And so, you know, just like Obama, if he doesn't recognize ISIS as an enemy or Islamic Jihad as an enemy, we can't fight them. We can't develop a strategy to fight an opponent or an enemy if we don't recognize that they are that. And there are enemies in the culture war. And I don't mean enemies in the strict sense of the term, but we are engaged in a spiritual war. We're engaged in a culture war in this country. And I should say we're not engaged, but the other side is. And it's just only natural that we're losing as it stands now.
David Limbaugh, this book is very personal to you, and it pretty much reflects a lot of us that we go to church, we practice our Christianity, yet we're not as out and open as other faiths. Why do you believe that is?
Well, when you say we're not out in the open, can you specify what you mean by that?
Well,
before I get off on a tangent.
We love the tangents here at 580KIDO. When you have people saying, well, we have people, you know, let's say the Muslims or this, that, and the other, where they wear it proudly. And you have people in the evangelical South and others that are proud of their Christianity. But here, whether it's the media making fun of Christians and no other faith, we seem to sometimes, you know, congregate amongst ourselves and are not as passionate as we should be as other faiths are.
Yeah. I guess it's not as cool to be Christian, maybe. I don't know. Or maybe people aren't as firm in their faith as some of these other religions. I dare say some political liberals who are not Christians, some of the secular liberals, and some liberals are Christians, don't get me wrong, but some of them, some on the hard left, have more faith in their ideologies than some of us do in our theology. And it's a curious thing. And by the way, one reason, Kevin, that I wrote this is that not just to reach skeptics or hoping to reach skeptics, but to also reach people who are believers but need their faith reaffirmed and need a little jolt of excitement about their faith. And I find the Bible and theology exciting, and I wanted to share that enthusiasm. And by the way, I don't experience that every day. Like every other Christian, as my pastor says, we leak We backslide. If we don't stay in it, we get away from it. If I'm writing a book on politics, if I'm writing a column on politics, that's where my singular focus is. It becomes my idol. I'm human. I'm a sinner, and I fall away from it. We need to pinch ourselves. We need to exercise the spiritual disciplines and get back to the faith, get back to Scripture, get back to prayer and the other spiritual disciplines, and stay in it, because it's not our natural tendency. And so Christianity is the true religion, and so we fall away from it as a natural process because we are sinners. And I just think we need to be mindful of it. We need to stay in it. But I can't explain, though, why so many people fall away and are not and seem to be ashamed of their faith. I just don't. Maybe they don't have the courage to stand up against the popular culture, which makes fun of and ridicules us and treats us as intolerant. And we know that Christianity is not intolerant, as they mean that term, but we're so afraid of being accused and being cast in that light that we don't stand up for what we really believe. I think that really hits it more closely.
David Limbaugh with us, Jesus on Trial, A Lawyer Affirms the Truth of the Gospel, with Kevin Miller here at 580 KIDO. You've written, you're a high profile guy, you're always writing and always speaking, making a difference. How was coming to putting this book together different from other books that you've written, sir?
Well, it deals with eternal issues, and it was different in that sense. The other books I've written and columns I've written deal with mostly politics and cultural issues. And a lot of times, I'm very passionate about those issues, but a lot of times you end up in a negative mindset because you're reporting on things that are very discouraging and dispiriting in our lives. This book deals with eternal issues, things that are very uplifting and encouraging, and about transcendent issues, and you can't help but be uplifted when you are close to these issues. When you engage in these issues, it is extremely gratifying and fulfilling. So it is diametrically different from writing about other things. Not that I apologize about writing about other things, but it's extremely different, and I'm grateful for that.
In writing this book, and you're getting great reviews on Amazon and the Christian Post and others, you admit that you had doubts, and you address those doubts in your book, Jesus on Trial.
Yes. I came to this kicking and screaming as a skeptic, and I had to study the Bible, finally give it a chance, before I could overcome those doubts. And I want to, share that experience. So this isn't just some clinical analysis of Christianity's truth claims, as you might expect from a lawyer. It is more than that. It is a reflection of my own process, my own spiritual journey, and it tells how I went through it and how I ultimately overcame those doubts. And interestingly, I overcame those doubts by going to the source itself. I think so many times, so many doubters read about the Bible, hear about the Bible, and hear all the alleged inconsistencies and the alleged mean old God of the Old Testament, and they don't want to be involved. They find it absurd, some of the stories, Jonah and the whale or the big fish and the virgin birth. They don't buy into all that alleged nonsense and mythical stories. And so I found, and I always believed this innately, even though I was a skeptic about Christianity, I always believed in God. And I wanted to believe in Christianity. I was a seeker, but I just couldn't get my arms around it. But finally, I went to the source. Instead of trying to remake God in my image, I let him reveal himself to me. I say let him as if I have any authority in the matter, but I think you understand what I mean. I finally relented and allowed his reality to soak in with me.
David Limbaugh with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO, speaking about his new book, Jesus on Trial. Have we made the Lord politically correct?
Well, the popular culture has, in the sense that they paint Jesus as a milquetoast. The God of the Old Testament was mean. Jesus was a nice guy, and he preaches love. And so you can throw away that Old Testament and we go for Jesus Christ. He was the greatest moral teacher, and he was such a wonderful guy, and it's all sweetness and light. Well, in fact, the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament are one and the same. God is immutable, unchangeable. And the God of the Old Testament, yes, he didn't look upon sin, but he was also a God of love. He is a God of love. And that's clearly expressed in the Old Testament. But more importantly, Jesus is not the milquetoast that the popular culture depicts him to be. He has no patience for sin. And he doesn't tolerate sin, and he's probably the most judgmental person who ever lived. Because he is fully God and fully man, and he stands in judgment of all of us. And so when we have this idea that Jesus is only one way and it's all salt and light, it's not exactly true. He had a whip and drove out the money changers from the temple. And when he spoke in the Sermon on the Mount and laid out the moral teaching, he spoke in no uncertain terms about the standards that we were supposed to live up to. And he was hard on people. I don't mean he was personally hard or ever rude, but he laid down a strict moral standard that no one can live up to without God's help.
Do you think it's possible, since he's God yet human, and through your research, do we know anything personally about him?
Well, he's fully human. I don't know what you mean. Do we know anything personally about him? The Bible says a lot about him and reveals his character throughout.
I was just going to say, what struck you about him personally, if anything, that surprised you?
Well, of course, I've been exposed to biblical stories and all. What surprised me was the extent to which he is human. And I think some of us miss that in our studies of the Bible and our understanding. When I understood he was fully human and fully God, a light went on about my understanding of Scripture. But I didn't understand why before. It used to be a reason for my doubt. Why would he say on the cross, "Father, why have you forsaken me?" Why would he say in the garden, "Father, take this cup from me"? And the reason is that he had to be human. He became incarnate as a decision. The triune God made a decision that the Son would become man and die for our sins. He had to be fully God to live a sinless life to cancel out our sins, but he had to be fully human to completely experience our sufferings, our full range of suffering. And he did experience them and more, way worse than we could ever imagine. Being separated from the Father, and also experiencing all the full real-time wrath of the Father for all the past, present, and future sins of mankind. When he said, "Father, why have you forsaken me?" he was experiencing his human suffering. And I didn't understand that the reality of that was critical in real history. And of course, in his divine side, when he said, "Take this cup from me," and then he said, "But not my will, but thy will be done," he knew that he was obedient to death. He had to die and had to be resurrected in his physical body in order to conquer death, in order to conquer sin. And so he knew ultimately, I mean, it was a reflection, "Take this cup from me," how excruciating his suffering was. It wasn't just some mathematical equation that the God of the universe wrote on a ethereal chalkboard. It was sending his Son to actually experience the suffering for us so that we can always relate to him and he can always relate to us. And this God, who was not incarnate in eternity past, he was not. He was fully God. He decided to become fully man, but he will remain fully man, and we as men can always relate to him in eternity.
More coming up with David Limbaugh. Jesus.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station. The D&B Garden Show with Debbie Cook, Saturday mornings at 10 on 580 KIDO. Idaho's place to talk.
KIDO, Jesus on Trial, the book, the author, David Limbaugh, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. David, let's get back to your research in this book. Since you study the Gospels and such, any insight into the apostles?
I'm not sure what you're talking about. I'm sorry. I don't know what you mean insight into the apostles. And the way that you're framing the question, are you talking about their willingness, their change from being feckless doubters and deniers when he died to becoming bold proclaimers of the faith once they saw him in his resurrection body? I don't know if that's what you're getting at. I want to try to be responsive to your question.
No worries. That and the idea that each gospel was written from their own perspective, how different they were.
Okay, I just dealt with the way you framed the question. I have no idea what you're getting at, so I don't want to play games with that and try to guess. But yes, I think that the diversity of the gospel message told through different people and different perspectives actually adds rather than detracts from the credibility of the gospel. You know, if they set out to try to concoct some kind of tightly woven conspiracy, it would be less believable. The fact that they didn't try to change what their own experiences were and to line everything up with each other so it was all perfectly fit, they told exactly the same story, to me, gives it a ring of authenticity.
David Limbaugh with us, Jesus on Trial, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. You have a couple chapters called Aha Moments. Can you describe those for people listening right now, for you personally?
Yeah, well, you know, I've run across different stories in my Christian walk that really appealed to me and were attractive. And I thought that if I shared those, that I might move other people. Just real quick, one was a story where H.A. Ironside, an old preacher, 1900s or whatever, spoke in the Salvation Army ministry, and he used to meet and have his sermons in the big meeting halls, and this one guy kept showing up on the back row and saw him every day. He wanted to find out more about the guy, but he always bolted after the sermon. So one day the guy got in late and had to sit on the front row, and Ironside was able to corner him and asked him, "Why, you know, what's your story?" And the guy said, "Well, I used to be an atheist, but I've become a Christian. I've become a believer, but in God, but I still don't embrace Christianity." He said, "Why? Why did you change that you at least believe in God now?" He said, he pointed to a man in the hall and said, "This man used to be a hopeless alcoholic. He tried everything, and he couldn't overcome his addiction until he found Christ, and his life has totally changed, and that's made an impact on me. But I still can't embrace Christianity. I read the Old Testament, and I read the New Testament. It does nothing for me. If I could, I love Isaiah and the beauty of the literature and the sweetness of the sounds of Isaiah. If I could read Isaiah and become a Christian, I would do it in a heartbeat." And Ironside said, "Here, let me read a passage from Isaiah to you, and you tell me who it's describing." So he read Isaiah 53, and then who's it describing? And the man didn't say anything, and he asked him to let him look at it. So he looked at it and read it several times to himself, and then he bolted out of the room. And he didn't come back for 3 days, and Ironside was worried about him. And the man admitted that this passage, Isaiah 53, was describing Jesus Christ on the cross and the specific details of his suffering that were predicted hundreds of years before he died and before he was born. And so the guy says, "I can't believe all these years I've been cursing the one by whose stripes I am healed." And he was immediately converted on that experience, and I just find that moving every time I read that story. And I don't do it a good job at all when I paraphrase, but I tell the story as Ironside told it in the book, and it is just so moving to me. And I mean it. Every time I read that story, it moves me. And there's all kinds of stories like that and other theological points of interest that attracted me to the faith that are in those two chapters called the Aha Moments, chapters 2 and 3, that I wanted to share because they caused me to be very enthusiastic about the faith, among other things.
Well, David, we really enjoy your work. We appreciate your time, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much for having me on. I'm sorry, I just wanted to clarify when you asked me a few questions to make sure I didn't, when we're conversing, I wanted to make sure there's so many things in here that I could jump off into. And when you asked me questions, I wasn't trying to be obstinate, just trying to make sure I knew where you were headed and didn't want to answer answer a question in a way that you weren't getting at. Because it's important that, you know, we communicate.
David, you've got me well trained from your first book and our old friend Sean McCabe. No worries here.
How's he doing?
He's doing great. Still in the spin and PR business. So we go back to Sean McCabe. So no worries, my friend.
Sean McCabe, the sinner. You tell him he's a sinner and he needs to read my book.
I will do that right now.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye bye. All right. Our wonderful David Limbaugh, Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And let me be the first to announce this. I haven't seen this anywhere locally, so not that we're a news show, but congratulations, Meridian, Idaho. You are number 49 in Money Magazine's Best Places to Live. Details on my Facebook at 580KIDO. Actually, we'll put that at 580KIDO's Facebook, but it's at the Kevin Miller Facebook page as well. But the 49th best place to live, Meridian, Idaho. Heck, I had you in the top three. Joining us now by our friend in the Midwest, Jeff Manasso, Fox News Radio. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, how are you, Kevin?
Not bad. I guess 49 is better than being number 100 or 150 or not making the list.
Could always be worse, right?
Exactly. I don't know if that pertains to the NFL, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, there's a lot going on in the NFL right now, and how they work their way out of this this domestic violence and abuse scandal. We'll see. I think, though, Kevin, though, that the broader picture is that domestic violence and abuse have gotten a bigger platform. And I know we've talked about this before. It's my hope that, I guess, you know, as just an American citizen, that we don't just keep focusing on the NFL, because this is an NFL problem. The statistics don't back it up that, you know, the violence on the field equals violence at home. You've got a couple of different cases, and the NFL mishandled the Ray Rice case. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. And then the media had, it was like red meat for the media. And then Adrian Peterson's story popped up. And then we saw Jonathan Dwyer down in Arizona. And then other, you know, different cases popped up. And even cases that were never charged years ago. You know, the media would, you know, go after those players like they did in Chicago. The bigger picture is that domestic violence and abuse are an epidemic in this country. And so if we're going to take this seriously, we're not just going to look at the NFL. We're going to look at entertainment. We're going to look at politicians. We're going to look at the very same politicians that are calling, you know, for an investigation into the NFL. We're going to look at education. We're going to look at the corporate world and your average Joe out there, because there are a lot of people who are guilty of abuse in this country, and there are a lot of victims out there. And so it'll be really interesting to see if once this NFL story dies down, that the narrative goes with it.
It's interesting, though, the conversation that it sparked. I agree with you. This is kind of, you know, kind of the hidden, unfortunate issue that everyone in America has been touched by when we're talking about child abuse and domestic violence. But the internal struggle going on that we hear on the radio, that we see on television, is quite disturbing yet fascinating, where you have NFL players supporting Adrian Peterson. We have Steve Bisciotti of the Baltimore Ravens saying that Ray Rice wants to come back. And you think to yourself, okay, Mr. Rice, I understand you have a lot of big money, big efforts, big this, big that, but whatever happened to shame?
Well, you know, Ray Rice, in all fairness, Ray Rice took responsibility early on for you know, what happened inside that elevator. We, quote unquote, were only, you know, disgusted by it once we saw the video, even though we knew exactly what had happened inside that elevator. And, you know, Ray Rice claims that essentially, and the union claims that, look, this is double jeopardy. You can't punish him twice for the same offense. And there's some internal struggles between Ray Rice, his narrative, the people that are supporting him, the alleged sources who are talking to ESPN, and the owner of the team. But then you've got cases like out in San Francisco. They're defending one of their players who's accused of domestic assault, who was arrested. And they're saying, look, no, he's going to play. There are other players out there who are on the watch list of being offenders. But what about Chris Brown, the singer? You know,
well, Rihanna went back. Went back with him.
Right. So you know what you know. It's hard to take this seriously, that this is an NFL problem. Do you understand?
I'm with you, but I go back to the double jeopardy thing. That works in court. I don't know if that works with a private industry. I mean, everybody opines
there
about that.
There are rules and regulations within the league and the players' union, as far as I understand, that wouldn't allow the NFL to punish Ray Rice twice, and that's kind of what happened. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to end up in court, or perhaps some sort of arbitration. And this story is certainly not going away anytime soon.
Right. And again, it seems to be skewed now when we're talking about fairness and everything else. It's again, getting back to this issue at 580KIDO, where you have, you know, Charles Barkley saying, look, people in the South, that's how they rear their children. Everybody in the South would, in fact, would be. By the way, we have this. Let's take a listen.
I'll tell you what. You want to know what the best next step is? That guy should never be on the field again. And I don't want to hear about how he grew up, what he learned. This was a whipping of a four-year-old boy, for God's sake. And all I'm telling you right now, that is sickness to me. And
I'm from the South. Whipping is, we do that all the time. Every black parent in the South is going to be in jail under those circumstances.
And the conversation continues.
Based on the pictures that we saw of Adrian Peterson's four-year-old boy, the lacerations all over his body, the cuts, the bruises. If that's the case, Charles Barkley, then every black parent should be in jail. If that's how they treat their children. I don't think that's how every black parent treats their children, than Charles Barkley. I think that's how a few people treat their children, allegedly. It is really sad to see that those pictures. And I'll be honest with you, Kevin, those pictures of Adrian Peterson's son made me want to love my kids even more. I just don't see that punishment like that being acceptable, not just within the black community, but within any community, south, north, west, east. I mean, it was hard to look at those pictures.
Well, and the fact is that Mr. Peterson maybe sees one of his many children from a lot of women 30 or 40 days a year. So it's not like he's in his life every day.
Yeah,
it is a tragedy, though, Jeff. And let me just say this, when you have people defending that behavior.
Right. Defending it and saying, look, this is a culture and this is part of what black people do. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I mean, I think that's what people who lose control do. And, you know, I don't think it's a black thing either. I think that it's you know, a situation where perhaps Adrian Peterson lost control of his anger. And I'm not going to explain how or what, but I saw those pictures and we saw what we saw. And punishing a child doesn't constitute cuts and bruises and lacerations throughout the body. I that's a hard sell for me.
Jeff, as always, we appreciate your candor, and thank you for joining us, sir.
You bet. Thanks, Kevin.
All right, our great friend Jeff Manasa with us.
at Fox News Radio. Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's get you to traffic.
Your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award. 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Sometimes when I get too sad, I think thoughts of the
A Montgomery County grand jury indicted Adrian Peterson for the charge of injury to a child.
The doctor's report describing open wounds in the child's thighs, backs, buttocks.
The trauma and terror that that child must have gone through at the hands of his own father, who's there to protect him and love him, just whipping him like he's a dog. I mean, we treat our animals oftentimes better than we treat our children, and that's just wrong.
The Ravens' decision to release Ray Rice was the right decision. He obviously has a lot of work to do to control his anger and his temper.
So if we staff for parents, Kevin, and especially in the day, you got a backhand, and you got it right now.
You know, Ray Rice claims you can't punish him twice.
That guy should never be on the field again, and I don't want to hear about how he grew up, what he learned. This was a whipping of a four-year-old boy, for God's sake. And all I'm telling you right now, that is sickness to me.
Tell me.
KIDO, it is 6:53, currently 61 in Meridian. Big ups to them. Voted Money Magazine's 49th best place to live. You can catch that story on our Facebook. On my personal one, Kevin Miller, the guy dressed up as Captain America, or the 580 KIDO Facebook. Give us a like. That would really help us out with the big suits, if you will. Let me share with you this article here. A very brief article. Personally, I have Meridian in the top three. I can't believe that Boise or Napa or any of the other great cities in the Treasure Valley. I mean, McKinley, Texas, really? White Plains, New York is number 48. St. George, Utah, I could go over the list. But anyway, Idaho native and three-time mayor Tammy DeWeerd says her favorite part of Meridian is the people. There's the anonymous donor who bought a new location for the food bank in 2012, for example, and the local philanthropist who donated $25 million for a park to the city in honor of his father. We have a community that gives back. I really think that says that about everyone here in Idaho, don't you? The city has shifted, neighbors say, from Boise suburb to standalone community as its population has grown. The downtown is home to a variety of restaurants and businesses and resident shops. Eat and see movies at the Village at Meridian, an outdoor mall. Many local jobs are in the health science field. And Wickless Candles Company Scentsy calls Meridian home. When folks aren't at work, they're likely to be out appreciating the rugged Idaho outdoors. Opportunities for snowboarding, camping, and swimming are abundant in the Boise National Forest, less than 2 hours away. And, again, I get goosebumps when we get this national recognition. Awesome. Awesome. You know, I was just talking to our friend Jeff Manasso off the air, and he said, you know, Kevin, what did you think of our conversation? I said, it's emotional. You know, when we're talking about abuse, and I know what you're saying, Kevin, this is a tune-out factor. I'm going to go listen to ha-ha. Well, we talk about news, opinions, and solutions. And, you know, it really hits home. You take a look at the front page of our website here. You've got a Boise restaurant owner charged with domestic violence. Now, he's innocent until proven guilty, but he's charged with domestic violence. You look at other stories throughout the world here, and you have local women being victims. What is it coming up? We'll share with you a story from our friends at Channel 7 with, you know, on the death of Selena Thomas. The people warned her, and people saw the signs, and yet she's dead. And we've decided, and a lot has been put on the line. A lot of people believe, you know, Kevin, people telling me behind the scenes, you might not get a lot of people to rally against domestic violence. And sometimes, and that's why I believe that this is our forum together. Sometimes you do things regardless of whether you get recognized for it or not. Like the farmer I saw this morning at 4:30, plowing the crops, like the mother that takes an extra job to make sure kids have enough clothes, and like us that are going to be at Foothills Christian Church on Thursday night at 7 o'clock, and if it's just me and Linda from Emmett, so be it. But that message has to be sent.
And we have so many wonderful groups. It's time that they get the attention. And we'll have that on our website, a video of it complete. I want to thank the Boise Rescue Mission. I want to thank Foothills Christian Church. I want to thank the WCA, that they will be there. And actions speak louder than words. I know people don't like to give up their nights. I don't like to give up my night, but I don't want to see another kid. I don't want to see another person beat. And if we can influence one person, if somebody in my hearing my voice right now is a victim of abuse, and you get information from us or one of these groups or vice versa, and you're out, that's a blessing that dwarfs any of the riches man can give us. So that's why we're going to be there. And look, you always say, hey, Kevin, you do so much. I need you to show up this Thursday night at 7 o'clock for an emotional night of prayer and information. You can find more information at 580kido.com or keep listening as we roll along. Let's get you to traffic. All right, coming up next hour, a live report on Syria being bombed. Do you believe we're at war? Insider report saying Middleton gives Canyon County the boot. We'll discuss. And your calls. Join us. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO. Serving Emmett.